This is Joseph Coco. I'm at Ape 2017 on behalf of Becky Hilburn's Art Process YouTube channel and blog. If you could introduce yourself, Ainsley.
Hi, I'm Ainsley Yeager.
Okay, and what brings you to Ape this year?
This is actually my first year at Ape. It's actually my first convention in the entire state of California. I am a Seattle-based cartoonist.
Okay.
And the big reason I wanted to come to Ape was that I heard that it is a really good crowd for selling books at.
Yeah.
And something I've been focusing on more is actually going and self-publishing my own content.
Fantastic. So you say that you were doing something different beforehand. Are they primarily, did they start off as webcomics?
Venture Force started off as a webcomic. The Mystery of La Luna was kind of a thing, was a short story that my friend and I did together. And I posted some of the pages online, but not all of them.
Okay.
Primarily what I used to do at conventions, I mostly did stuff like fan art prints.
Right.
And I kind of decided, even though I had fun doing that, it wasn't really where my heart was.
Okay. But you were making comics that whole time, you just weren't
mm-hmm.
necessarily printing them and trying to sell them at shows?
Yeah, a lot of time at shows, especially with Venture Forth, I just started it to make sure I didn't get rusty at drawing while I was working a 40-hour work week job.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I'll do a page a week.
Presumably not comics related?
No, it wasn't comics related.
Yeah.
It was...
That's most people, so...
Yeah, it was a image production job, so it was at least
creative.
Somewhat helpful.
Yeah.
But overall, yeah, not a lot of opportunities to, make use of my illustration chops.
Okay. And Venture Forth is a story that you had ruminated on for a while, or you just decided you wanted to create a comic and it just came about from there?
Venture Forth is more like a comic journal. I would just talk about things that happened to me, at some point, or, an observation. Most of it in there, I could say, is probably it's about learning how to be an adult and not sell your soul.
Okay.
And from there, I kind of just did it for a few years while I was working my 9-to-5 job.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended up getting laid off. And I was like, well, I'm going to try doing this full time. And I worked more on Venture Forth, but a big problem I had was that I realized I had time to do longer stories. And so I was like, I think this is a good time to wrap up Venture Forth. And once I did that, I was like, I'm going to put this in a book and print it. Hopefully
yeah.
I can sell it to other people and they'll like it.
Okay, and what was your process for that? I assume it's self-published?
It is self-published.
Okay.
I did try to run a Kickstarter for it, but it was a very pie in the sky, the dream book I wanted, so it didn't
yeah.
quite get funded. I was almost there, but what
and
I ended up doing instead
did you,
was...
Did you talk to people beforehand, or were
I
you just like...
I did talk to people beforehand.
Okay, I was just making sure.
Yeah, it wasn't my first Kickstarter.
because, some people will just look at the large success stories and think, well, I could do that too. But if you look at the overall community, sure, most comics, I think it's something 60-70% end up getting funded. But
mm-hmm.
a lot of them are at very reasonable cost points, 1,000, 600, not 10,000 or whatnot.
Yeah, I was asking for 5,000 for it. And I knew it was kind of up there, but I really wanted to do it because it was a print run I couldn't afford to do out of pocket. But
sure.
I knew as a backup plan... I could do a digital black and white run. I could pay for that out of pocket.
Yeah. So is the comic done through an offset printer or a digital printer?
It's digital.
Okay. So it's print on demand?
Yeah, it's a print on demand service. The company is called Kness, and I honestly can't say anything bad about them. They have been great.
Fantastic.
And have been very good with communication.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, most people have at least idiosyncrasies about, well, if you go with this, you need to make sure to do this or that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to hear that. I mean, your experience was basically neutral, which as far as printing goes, means it was good.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I will definitely say I have a leg up on a lot of other people because when I was pretty young, 18, I knew that I wanted to do self-publishing in some capacity.
Sure.
So I actually went to school to learn how to do graphic design specifically for print.
Okay.
And I learned all these different tips and tricks of how to pre-flight stuff, things to look out for when you're sending your work to a printer.
Yeah.
And I took that knowledge and I just basically carried it with me and be like, okay, now I have this and now I can self-publish things.
Right.
And not
so you did your due diligence. So there wasn't much room for the comic to be messed up in the first place because you gave them basically a pristine product.
Yeah, basically. Generally with print, there's always going to be something that's just this isn't exactly how I wanted, but it's good enough. I pretty firmly believe there's no such thing as a perfect print job because... That's the nature of it.
Sure. Yeah, my family actually publishes a newspaper, so
mm-hmm.
they have a pretty close relationship with their press, but there's
mm-hmm.
often kinks that they need to go back and forth with
Oh, absolutely.
The press.
I mean, print checking for color, it's like, that is a career that people have. Like, you're not, yeah. It's not always going to be perfect.
Yeah. So, where is Ventureforth going from here? Do you plan on continuing it, or is it a self-contained?
Ventureforth, I am actually going to leave it, like, as is. I'm not going to do any more. I might do, like, little small comics here and there that are, like, more personal.
Yeah.
But overall, right now, I'm kind of between projects, so I'm going to be working more on, like, little shorter stories while I work on a much bigger project that I'm hoping to launch as a webcomic in early 2018.
Okay. And we can hear about announcements on that on your social media?
Oh, yes, absolutely. On my website, Ainsley.com, that's Ainsley with two A's and two Y's.
Okay. Yeah, that's difficult.
Yeah, it's easy to type, but I didn't realize, like, once I got, it's like, oh, yeah, like, actually
saying
it.
You have to say it every time. Yeah. So can you tell me about some of your other works?
Yeah, definitely. So another thing I did was I have this book called Mystery of La Luna. That is something that a friend wrote and I illustrated it. Okay. It is kind of our open love letter to retro science fiction stories.
Yeah, I got the impression of that just from the cover. So you definitely did a good job.
Yeah, I was very happy with that. I was like looking at all these really pulpy posters. Like, okay, I need to capture this essence.
Yeah. I haven't personally read too much, but Becca reads a lot, so I've got a good taste for what the covers of those books look like.
Awesome.
Almost any time she goes to a used bookstore, she runs straight over to the Pulp Fiction section and tries to find some of the older stuff. But yeah, a lot of that is available online as well. So what was the inspiration behind La Luna?
So La Luna kind of started when a friend and I were talking about, like, older sci-fi and how we were kind of disappointed in a lot of, like, the newer stuff of, like, seeing the near future as, like, being really dark dystopian. We're like, we just want, like, these fun Buck Roger adventures.
Yeah.
And they're, like, something, like, especially, like, bite-sized, like Outer Limits or Twilight Zone, where it's, like, you have an interesting story, you do that, and then you move on. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, okay, let's work together and like come up with the story, and we're gonna print it. And we actually also kickstarted this book. This was my very first kickstarted book.
Cool. So would you say that the story is hopeful, like some of the older sci-fi, or you just avoided going down more pessimistic?
We mostly avoided going down a pessimistic route. It's not really so much as like a prediction of the future as we wanted to do a fun adventure story set in a retro sci-fi setting that was a little more optimistic and not just like, we have these beautiful glass towers that the rich live in, then there's the undercity where the poor live and die.
Yeah. So what particularly drew you to Ape? I know you said that you heard that books do well here.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the trip like down from Seattle? Did you fly here or did you drive?
I did fly here. A big reason too was I've just never done a show in California. And I wanted to see what the scene was like. And Ape happened to be at a good time for me in terms of my schedule and other conventions.
Okay.
And I was just like, this seems like a fun show and I really want to try it because like, I've heard nothing but great things about the crowd here, about people like being really interested in original content.
Yeah.
And like, that certainly cannot be said about all shows I go
too. Yeah. So you do independent cons in Seattle?
I do a lot of conventions in Seattle. I'm pretty much at Emerald City Comic Con every year. I'm going to be at Geek Girl Con next week. I also do shows in Portland just because it's only a 3-hour drive for me and I have family there, so it could just cost me gas to go there.
Yeah.
And then I have Kumori Con there in a few weeks. And then, weirdly enough, I also do reptile shows because I have a bunch of reptile art.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So do people commission you at those shows, or they're just buying prints of reptile?
A lot of time at those shows, people don't really commission me, but they usually buy prints. They'd be like, oh, I have a ball python. I'll buy your ball python prints.
Sure. It'll be a friend for their python.
Yeah.
So I've talked to other artists about doing shows that aren't necessarily a comic show or an art show. Like, for instance, horror shows often get some crossover with tattoos and special effects makeup and things like that. So what's your experience? Firstly, what made you decide to actually do a reptile show, considering you probably don't know a whole lot of artists that work in?
Usually I am the only artist at those shows. Sometimes there might be one other person who's, like, selling stickers of, like, different kinds of reptiles.
Yeah.
And basically, it just came down to I was usually already attending these shows because I love reptiles. It's like I love them, and I usually like pick up like supplies I need there because it's cheap. It's easier to just get it at these biannual shows than to like order it online and hope that my $40 UV light bulb doesn't break in the mail.
Sure.
Yeah, and yeah, a lot of time it's just like it's definitely different. I know I stand out a lot, mm-hmm. but I also feel like the content I bring there, like I don't bring all my comics, I don't bring all my fandom prints, but like I gear myself more towards like what I think that crowd wants. And like there's certainly people there that have no idea why I am there and think it's weird that I was allowed in. But then I have other people who are just like, no, this is great. I love that there are artists here that are like drawing cute reptiles and I can buy it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, hopefully that'll encourage other people to try shows outside of the general wheelhouse of anime cons and independent comic cons.
I will definitely
sort of
say it's harder to find like those, finding a different niche to go into, but once you do, like, it can be kind of nice because you can, it's nice to be the big fish in a small pond sometimes.
Yeah. So what about Singularity?
So Singularity, this is a comic anthology I did a few years ago. It is a robot and robotics fanzine. Both of them are about the same thing. All have art contributed by artists all over the world. And I basically paid for this out of pockets because I just wanted to do a book about robots.
Okay, so you organized the fanzine?
Yeah, I organized the whole thing. I paid people only by, I could only pay them $5 a page, but I also gave them the files so that if they wanted to, they could print it themselves.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, certainly when it's early on in their careers, are just looking for things to put on their table, basically, because if you work these kind of shows, sometimes people even just avoid your table if you don't have enough work on it.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely a problem.
So, I mean, I think that's awesome.
Did you have a, like, were you part of a social group that was into this sort of thing and the project just kind of came from you guys getting excited about it, or you just decided you were going to do a fanzine and settled on doing robots?
I mostly just decided I was going to do a fanzine. I talked to some friends who had more experience with doing anthologies. I was like, hey, I'm thinking about doing my zine this way as an anthology. Like, what do you think of that? And they gave me some really great feedback. And then afterwards, I went to a few conventions. I had little postcards made of the art I actually got commissioned, like for the covers. I was like, hey, I'm doing this zine and I'm looking for people who want to submit to it. And like the only thing I require is it has to relate to robotics, something mechanical or AI. And beyond that, you can go crazy with it.
Yeah.
And I was kind of surprised how much interest there was because I thought it was really niche, but now I guess robots are becoming an in thing. So I was like, yeah.
I mean, I think either people have an interest in robots or they might just want to do it to try to challenge themselves because like Becca, for instance, she likes robots, but she almost never draws them or cars.
Yeah.
So she actually wants to do more like commission sort of stuff of robots, but because people don't see it on her table, they don't even think, hey, this girl can draw robots, you know? So yeah, it's super cool that you were able to draw up a crowd like that. And it's also, it seems like a good way to approach people at a convention. Like, hey, I have this thing. If you'd like, you can participate in it.
Yeah, and like I was definitely chatting up with people. I didn't like go to every table like, hey, you should submit to my thing. It'd be like I talked to them. Be like, hey, like if you're looking to be in more anthologies and zines, like I have one going on right now.
Yeah.
And I'm actually making a point of paying artists and making sure that you have a way to make money from it.
Yeah.
Because like, I couldn't afford to actually pay people like a living page rate because like this is a passion project pretty much completely out of pocket.
Yeah.
And well, like people
think
got it.
Probably from like a 2 to 5 minute conversation, people could see that you're not just trying to scam them.
Oh yeah, like this is a very earnest like passion project where I was just like, I just really love robots and I want there to be a robot book. No one's done a robot book, and there's that old adage of like, if it's not there, you need to make it.
Yeah. So how do you feel about the project now that it's out? Like, would you recommend people organize fanzines, or do you feel like it was too much work?
I thought it was a fair amount of work. There was a lot of wrangling people who were a little late on their submissions, but I planned
ahead
for that.
So you did give everybody deadlines?
I gave everybody deadlines. I had check-ins, and a lot of people kind of waited till last minute, which is kind of normal, but I knew that was coming, so I buffered things out. So, like, I had the deadline of, like, I think I said it's sometime in, like, December, but the real deadline was, like, I needed to have everything done by March for Emerald City Comic Con.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense, because Becca plans a lot of her stuff around cons, you know, in terms of releasing things.
Yeah.
Like, that's, to her, that's the deadlines.
Yeah. You're like, definitely, like, the con is kind of, like, the real deadline, but I like having things done ahead of time so that I can prep for my convention and not need to worry about finishing a product beforehand.
Sure. And finally, so let me get your Ainsley.
Yeah, I have
on
one real business card left.
Oh, it's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, if you want to
you can have that.
Look at your logo. And we can buy your comics and your pins here?
Yep, you can get pretty much everything I'm selling at my table on my site.
Fantastic. And I also wanted to ask you if you have any advice for artists who are considering tabling at 8 for the first time?
So, weirdly enough, I actually have a lot of advice for that. And a few days ago, I did a thread on my Twitter about advice for people early, like, people going to conventions, just like how you can kind of set up your table.
Yeah.
But the biggest advice I'd probably have is, if, like, even if you are struggling to, like, make your money back, like, that's pretty normal at the beginning.
Yeah.
And
definitely.
So, like, don't lose hope right away. Like, it definitely takes time.
Sure. Okay, well, thank you so much for talking to me, Ainsley, and I hope you have a great day.
Yeah, thanks, you too.
Thanks for listening to Up and Conning Artist. A video version is available on the Natasoup YouTube channel, along with some convention recaps. And if you wouldn't mind, please consider supporting Becky Hilburn by contributing to her Patreon, or checking out her Tiny People comic at 7inchkara.com and wherever books are sold.